Dave's Psych Lectures, part of the Thunderbird 6 podcasting network. This podcast is released under a free license. Copyright Charlie 2.5 channel. Feel free to distribute the information as you get. Please money out of it. Tear up all the other ones. Mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.broadbeck.com.
Right, so you've done it. One way analysis variance. You've got three, four groups, whatever.
My website is people.amc.ca/broadbeck. You now find a significant F.
And
most of the music, all the music's Podsafe, and most of it comes from garageband.com or the Podsafe Music Network. See you next time.
So that's your null. So your alternative then is that at least two of the means differ. That just that this isn't true, the HO isn't true, and all that means is that at least two of those means differ. But you don't know which two. It may be all, let's say you have four means, like we had in the assignment, right? One, two, three, four. Is one different from two, and then three and four are the same? But they're both different than one, but not from two. Is three different from four, and four different from two, but one and three are the same? It doesn't answer that question, the analysis of variance. It says that they aren't all different. That's all it says. So the question you might be very interested in, you might not be, but the question you may be interested in is which two means differ, or just in general, which means differ from each other? Because it could be that they're all different. It could be that one's different from one other. You just don't know. One of the ways you could do this is do a t-test, right? So you have all these, if you had four groups, like in the assignment, and you had t-tests to do, you do what? One versus two, one versus three, one versus four, two versus three, two versus four, three versus four. Now you've got six t-tests to do. If you do all of those at 0.05, your alpha is going to go up, right? Because you've now done six t-tests at 0.05. It gets to a point, if you have enough groups, that you're bound to get one just by random chance alone that shows a t-test difference that actually isn't really there. Just by dumb luck alone, it happened. So if you just did t-tests and stuck with an alpha equals 0.05, you can't do that. One of the things you could do is do what's called the Bonferroni T procedure. Bonferroni, of course, the San Francisco treat. Thank you very much. It's really just a t-test between two groups, but it corrects the alpha level. So how many corrections, in other words, how many comparisons are you doing? And it multiplies it times alpha. So let's say you're only interested in 1 versus 4 and 1 versus 3. So you're just doing two of them? So instead of doing the six t-tests, you're really only interested in two. The other two are control groups or something like that. That, which very often won't be the case, right? You don't want to know if the two control groups differ. You just want to know if the experimental groups differ from one of the control groups. Good enough. So you just do two comparisons. So in that case, 0.05 becomes 0.025. This used to be a real pain when you did all these by hand, because knowing what the critical value of a t-test was at the level of 0.013 was never, wasn't easy. The tables weren't set up that way. So you'd actually have these Bonferroni tables that were really complicated and annoying. Now you just click the button in PASQ473, whatever they've renamed SPSS, and it just does it for you. So it's really pretty simple now. The t-test itself is a little bit different. It's called t-prime. It's different than a t-test you'd be used to, right? Because what you're doing here, this is just x bar 1 minus x bar 2, so that's mean 1 versus mean 2, whatever. So group 1, group 2. It could be 3 and 4 or 6 and 14. I don't care. Now, instead of dividing by, what would we typically divide by here, right? The bottom part of a t-test would typically look like this, right? It would be s squared 1 over n1 plus s squared 2 over n2. That's what you would normally do for a t-test. The difference when you use the Bonferroni T procedure, or really any T test when you've already got an analysis of variance done, is you have an estimate of variance for the whole thing. And as long as you haven't violated any assumptions, and you probably haven't because you ended up getting a significant effect, you already have mean squared error, or mean squared within group, or mean squared within cell, or mean squared residual, or whatever you feel like calling it. You already have that value. So why not use it? What this assumes, by the way, is you have an equal number of subjects per group, right? So if you have four subjects per group, right, and you end up with whatever your mean square is, you can see, I hope, that the sum s squared sub 1 over n1 plus s squared sub 2 over n2, well, n1 and n2 should be the same number, shouldn't they? Because you have the equal number of subjects per group, right? Does that make sense? So now this changes, it becomes equal to s squared 1 plus s squared 2 over n2. Sorry, over n. N1 or n2, it doesn't matter, because they're going to be the same number. Because if you have four subjects in each group, they're both four. Now, again, I said that mean squared error, all it is a variance, right? That's why it's called analysis of variance. And it's an estimate of error variance. And that's exactly what this is, s squared sub 1 and s squared sub 2. So now, these are both the same thing. S squared sub 1 and s squared sub 2, because we're using the same value for both of them, mean squared error. So that's why you end up with 2 times the mean squared error over n. Now, of course, you take the square root of that for the bottom of a T procedure. Yeah, Seth?
What happens if you have two different group sizes?
Then you have to go back and do it like this. Yeah, you still use mean squared error. Okay, but it'll be over N1 and over N2. You might want to actually use a pooled variance estimate doing that. Okay. So you would get a pooled variance estimate using the same same formula for getting pooled variance, except both the S squareds are mean squared error. Remember pooled variance, which is number of subjects minus 1 times S. So it's, well, I'm not going to say it. I can write it out. Right, looks like this. Right? For pooled variance, you'd probably do that first. Right? Get a pooled variance number, but the variance here, they're going to both be using mean squared error.
Okay.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that. There are many, many reasons to try to have equal numbers of subjects per group. It's not that big a deal with one-way analysis of variance. It becomes exceedingly important with anything more complicated. It's not like it wrecks everything. It just makes life a lot easier if they're equal. Yeah, the beauty of this is, I mean, you can worry all you want about formulas, and it's good that you wonder about it, but frankly, this is one of those things where you just go click. And those of you guys that went yesterday to learn about how to play with this stuff with the computer probably found that out, that really, this is really pretty easy stuff to do. I mean, it involves setting up the hardest part of setting up, doing a statistical procedure with a computer is setting up the data set properly. It's really the hardest part. The rest of it involves pointing and clicking. And as long as you set up the data set properly, if you point and click at something and it won't work, it'll tell you, no, you can't do that, or it'll give you like an error message. Right? So it's like, oh, I wanted to do this. Well, you can't. In fact, oftentimes it'll even do nice things like it'll tell you, you violated an assumption. It's really quite nice. If you know how to read the output, hardest part sometimes is just reading the output. Right? So you take a look and it says, you know, variance is unequal. You look, oh, the variances are unequal. Then you have to look, oh, by how much? You use your own judgment. So typically, you probably wouldn't do this by hand, though it wouldn't be that hard because you'd have the value for mean squared error. You'd have both means. You'd have n. That involves plugging numbers into your calculator. Right? So you could do it by hand. So it's just a t-test, but we've changed the bottom, and we changed the alpha. Now, here's another way to do it. This is something called a studentized range. What you're getting here is a value for a statistic called Q, which looks horribly like, you might take a look at that and say, doesn't that look like a T?
Uh-huh.
So you get the large, now this is what you want to compare. The Bonferroni is for comparing, say, just two means, or three, or however many you want to do. What this is doing is saying, I'm going to compare all of them. I'm going to pick so many means, and what's the largest mean, and what's the smallest mean? So you take the largest, and you subtract the smallest, and now you're dividing by square root of mean squared error over n, instead of 2 times mean squared error, because this now isn't a t statistic anymore. So you get this value for q, okay? And again, this is something you could you do with a clicking and the pointing. And then you take that. Oh, I should go back. Sorry. What am I doing? Okay, yeah. And then you just look it up in the studentized range table, and it tells you if there's a difference between the largest and the smallest. Okay? Yes, sir.
What's the advantage of this over?
The advantages of all these things we'll talk about today are how conservative they are or not. Bonferroni is nice and easy to do and easy to understand, and I like it, but it's pretty conservative because it goes to 0.0, you know, whatever. Like if you're doing 6 comparisons, it's now 0.008 basically, or 0.008. I think that's right, which is a bit of a pain because it's getting very conservative, right? If it's only 2 or 3 comparisons you're doing, it's fine, and it's easy to understand because it's a t-test, basically. Here, what this is supposed to do is give you a number, give you something that takes into account a whole bunch of different values and keeps it at 0.05, but by doing that, it becomes a little less conservative. So they're really a matter of, you know what, when you do these things, what I tend to do when I analyze data is I say, do all of them. And if they all agree, I'm pretty happy. If one doesn't agree with me and it's a really conservative one, I'm okay. If all of them but the most sort of liberal one, which is the Newman-Cools test, comes out and it says there's a difference, I get a little concerned. Newman-Cools is very similar. You get that Q value that you already determined. So you did the Q. Okay? Now you plug that into this formula. You get the Q value, you get the critical value for Q. Okay? And you multiply it times the square root of the mean squared error over n, and that gives you a value for something called W. Okay, I know it's getting weird. But W comes out, and let's say it says 7. That means that any two means that differ by 7 or more are significantly different. And R, you can look that up, it's just the range. So how many means are you looking at? Are you looking at 2 means, 3 means, 5 means, 7? And you can see it's using Q, so it's very similar. This is the Newman-Cools test. In fact, it uses the studentized range thing, so people call it student Newman-Cools. You'll see the student Newman-Cools use. I think that's probably the most common one. It's the one I've used, I think, in the past.
What, this one or the studentized?
I've used student Newman-Cools. Like, you take the studentized range because you need to get Q. It's distributed the same way using the studentized range. And then you'll see this very often. Post-hoc Newman-Cools tests or post-hoc student Newman-Cools tests showed that.
What is R again?
Oh, R is the range. So how many different means are you comparing? So let's say you're comparing 4 means. You then just look it up in the Q table for 4.05. So any set of comparisons with range R, in other words, all the ones where we have four means. So then what that does is that gives you this W value. You've got now four means. You say, excuse me, any of those means that differ by, and let's say it comes out to be seven, any of those means that differ by seven are different, significantly different. And it's what it's supposed to be doing is doing all of this all together at 0.05. And the degrees of freedom there, by the way, are the degrees of freedom for mean squared error. There's something very weird about post-hoc tests. You never report the values in your paper, so you never report what your Q value is. You never report what the W ends up being if you're using the student Newman Cole's. You just don't. I don't know why that's the convention, but it is. You just say, I did post-hoc tests and found this. Oddly enough, with a Bonferroni T procedure for T prime, you do. Why? I don't know. I don't pretend to understand the people that do the APA publication manual. I stopped trying to understand them when the fourth edition came out, and they said, well, we don't want you to do the start of your reference here and then indent it here because people can't do that because they're not good with word processors. I thought, that's it, I quit. I'll just do what I'm told, but I'm not going to stop trying to understand you people. And then the next edition, they went away from that, went back to the hanging indent, which is the way it should be. Yeah, that and when they said no more using the word subjects, that's it. I quit. I'll just do what I'm told, but I'm not going to think anything you do makes any sense anymore. They also took out putting in Elsevier summary tables and papers. So like an example, let's say you have three groups, anything with a range of three. So you say, okay, we got three means we're interested in. We've done the calculation. We come up with this number, say seven. Any of those three that differ by seven are significantly different. Okay? The nice thing about this is it actually gives you a number. So if it comes out and says seven or whatever, you look and go, oh, those two are different by seven. They're different. The way you typically present this, in fact, is that you'll have a table of means, probably. You know, typically in this case, you're going to present a table of your means, and then you just put a little star showing these two are different from these, or, you know, a little asterisk, something like that, and that's typically what's done. Yes, Dad?
Okay, so going back to the student-sized range.
Yes.
Your Q value will just say the largest and the smallest are different.
Yeah.
And so this one will say if they're...
Different by, if any two of them are different by this much.
This is one that's a little bit nicer because you get to see all of that.
That's what it's supposed to do, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Hopefully.
Yeah, and I mean, again, these things are all... If they all agree, you should be happy. But they don't usually all agree because they have varying levels of sort of conservatism in them. And, I mean, I like being conservative in science. On the other hand, which is probably the only place I like being conservative, but in science, you have to be. On the other hand, I kind of don't mind the idea that they're a little bit more loose because, frankly, if it showed a difference and the pattern there, the pattern of means comes out looking like I expected it to because I have a pretty good theoretical reason for this and the past research shows this. If something that's giving me a little bit more of a break statistically, like alpha level wise, or I guess not alpha, more beta, right? It's giving me more power. If it comes out and says these two are different and my theory says those two are different and everyone else says those two should be different, and if actually, while it says it's 0.05, it's probably closer to 0.07 or something like that, I don't really care. Because, you know, I have good reason to believe this will happen. Tukey made up one of these called the HSD, which means honestly significantly different. That's what HSD stands for. And honestly, it really does. And it does exactly the same thing, except it does largest to smallest. So it uses Newman-Cools, but says always do largest to smallest as your range. It's really, in essence, a subset of the Newman-Cools. You can see these are all related because they're all using this Q, this studentized range thing. Right? It's probably, Tukey's is probably the most liberal of all of them. Yeah, it probably is. And there's one that I'm not going to talk about today called the Scheffé test that is so conservative that sometimes when you have a significant effect, it then tells you you have no significant differences. So it's too far the other way. So it's not bad. Newman Cools is okay. Question you might ask is, which one should I use? Right? Which we would all ask. Frankly, most people do all of them and find out which one fits their what they want to have happen. That's a little unethical. I like something in the middle, like I said, Stud Newman Cools. I'd stick to one in a paper. You look like a bit of an idiot if you say, oh, well, in this one I decided to use a different post-hoc test because I like to mix and match. That's not going to go over well with an editor because they know what you're doing is picking and choosing. But honestly, most people just say, yeah, do them all, click. And the big reason I think to do that is if they all agree, you're probably on pretty sound ground. If the one that disagrees is the one called the Scheffé test, C-H-I-F-F-E, accent aigu, E. So that should be I should have said it in French then. But anyway, then you're probably still okay. If it's all because it's really conservative. If it's all over the place, I'd pick one in the mid level. So Stud Newman Cools probably. Right? But then stick to that in a paper. You don't mix and match. Frankly, if you're only interested in one difference, just one difference, like you say, the only thing I really care about is this one different from one of the control groups? Let's say you have three control groups and one experimental group. And you can have that. A lot of times in like drug research, you will have a real placebo group that's given a placebo, a group that's given nothing, a group that's given everything but the placebo and the drug. It's very common. All you really care about are they different from the placebo group, right? Because you look at it and go, oh, look, they're all roughly the same, those control groups. If they're not the same, then you got something else going on. But the only thing you really care about is it different from the regular placebo control? You're really only interested in one comparison. You can go with Bonferroni in that case, but all you're doing there is a real t-test because you're only doing a comparison of two, so you're still just using 0.05. The only difference you're doing is you're using 2 times mean squared error over n as your standard error estimate on the bottom of the t instead of using that, right? S squared 1 over n1 plus s squared 2 over n2, and you take the square root of that. So in that case, I just do a plain old t-test. I mean, it is technically Bonferroni, but it's 1 over 1 times 0.05. You're just using a 0.05 level of significance for a t-test. So you can do that. It's no big deal. There's other times. I'll finish this up, and then I'll make that point. I've used, as I said, HSD in the past, and I've used SNK in the past. I used HSD in a paper once because I thought, when I looked at it, nothing else was showing up. It was all sort of scattered around the place. But the thing that fit with the theory that I had and that fit with everything else in the literature was HSD, so I used it. But I used it, in one experiment, I used it in the other 4 experiments. I didn't then say, well, now we're going to use this one. Because then you just look like an idiot. Right? One of the nice things that happens... Well, any questions before I make this other point that isn't on the slide?
I just have a really simple question.
Yeah, please.
Mean squares error, that's just the within groups, right?
Yeah. Mean squared within, mean squared error, mean squared within cell, mean squared residual. They all mean the same thing.
Okay.
Yep. Let's say you've got a group... Let's say you've got chickadees and you've given them 2 alternatives. And they're going to go, and you're looking at percentage correct, something like that. And you want to know, and you just see the groups are different. Okay? You do analysis of variance, shows up, that's fine. You're also interested in, are the scores different from random chance? Now, if there's 2 alternatives, random chance is 50%. Now, the obvious choice here, in fact, is a t-test, right? It's not actually, you might think, well, you could probably do a Z, and you could do a thing with the binomial expansion, getting a population variance, but it's very confusing. Why not just use a good old t-test? I've got a mean. I've got a theoretical mean, which is 50%. I've got a group mean, which is whatever the hell it is. I don't know, 74. Are they different from chance? Well, you're going to do a t-test then. In that case, though, again, because you have mean squared error available, you can use it. So what you typically do with a t, as you know, is t equals x bar minus mu over the square root, over s divided by the square root of n. So that's typically what you do. In this case, though, you have a more accurate estimate of s than just the s for that one group. You have mean squared error from an analysis of variance. So in that case, and I've actually done this, do use that instead. So in that case, your t becomes x bar minus mu all over mean squared error over the square root of n. Because you've got more observations there, it's a better estimate of the variance. So you got a better statistical test, which I had to explain to the editor of this journal when I published this. But he understood it as soon as I explained it to him. Right? So that's one of the cases where if you've got S and it's based on 4 subjects, and you've got mean squared error and it's based on 16, what's going to be a better estimate? The one based on 16 will use it. They're supposed to be both estimating the same thing anyway, right? So that, in that case, much better approach. You might even do that. Let's say you had a... So all I'm done here, basically, is kind of like a Bonferroni-T procedure, except I've just got one comparison, and it's to a mu. And it's one comparison, so I use 0.05. Right? So it's something that I'm not going to spend a great deal of time on this because, well, there's 2 reasons. The first one is it's easy enough to just do them by pointing and clicking. The second reason is more of a philosophical reason. My stats professor, Ian, the Scottish guy I'm always telling you about, I asked him once in grad school, why aren't we learning post-hoc tests? He said, of course we're not learning that. You're interested in the pattern of all the means. You're interested in individual means differing from each other. Aren't you paying attention, Broadbeck? Sorry, Ian. And he had a point. If you are doing analysis of variance, you're interested in, are these means different from what I would expect by random chance? That's the statistical question you're asking. If you're interested in mean 1 different from mean 2, do a damn t-test. That was Ian's point. And I kind of like what he's saying there, which is your null is mu 1 equals mu 2 equals mu 3 equals dot, dot, dot equals mu k. It's all the means are the same. If that's your null and your alternative is no, they aren't, you should then be able to just look at the data and say, oh, I see why right here. If you're interested in a particular pattern, this one's up here, this one's down here, and this one's over here, that's a whole different statistical question you're asking. And there you ought to be doing mathematical modeling instead of inferential statistics. That's sort of a philosophy. Now, am I saying you should all do mathematical modeling? Probably not, because most people don't, and it's actually not that hard, but it's a bit of a pain to do, and no one does it in the literature. There are people that do it, but it's not much, much, much less common. And frankly, usually, when you think about it, we actually are interested in a pattern of difference. Right? Like I said, if we have 3 control groups and 1 group, 1 experimental group, the pattern we're looking for is 3 the same, 1 higher or lower. That's the pattern we want. When you say it's not that all the means aren't the same, and you see that, you should be, yeah, I'm fine. So what Ian's point was, you know, in fact, in that case, do an analysis of variance to get your mean squared error, and then simply present nothing but a like a t-test and say, but I used mean squared error on an analysis I did here. That wouldn't go over well in a journal, by the way, just letting you know. But he's got a philosophical point. So practically, you have to do these things oftentimes, but philosophically, I'm kind of opposed to them. But that doesn't go over very well with thesis supervisors and with, journal editors. So you kind of have to do them. Now, if you only have two groups, it doesn't matter because you say that two means are different. Oh, there's only... So two of the means are different. Well, there's only two means. Which two could it be, right? So that's different. All right. Questions about these? They're not that bad to do. All right. Thus ends the comparison stuff. Do you know we're actually right exactly where I want to be? And you have a break coming? Do you want to have shortest class ever? You do? Because you have a lot of long ones that are really hard, and I know that, and it's going to get harder after the break. So why don't we just end it here, and it's shortest class ever, and it's too bad it's not an afternoon class, because then we can all go drinking. So what's stopping us now? Thanks, guys.
Say that you know it, but today we'll say what tomorrow will be. I thought that I showed it. I guess it's front row wait. Watch, you'll see. And if you say that you I need you to say tomorrow is too late. I need you to say that you love me so well now today. I can't wait.
This podcast is released under a Creative Commons copyright share like 2.5 Canada. Feel free to redistribute the information as you see fit, but please don't make any money out of it. And if you do, you got to tell me because I'm reserving that right. Giving up all the other ones, including mash it up any way you want, okay? Also, of course, give me attribution. If you want to get a hold of me, my email address is dave.brodbeck, B-R-O-D-B-E-C-K, at algomau.ca. My website is people.auc.ca/brodbeck/blog. Most of the music, all the music's PodSafe, and most of it comes from GarageBand.com or the PodSafe Music Network. See you next time.